is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Seahawks trader Michael Bumpus, along with Paul Gallant, Danny and Gallant. Going with the 49ers, buddy.
You went with them too.
I know, but I'm the follower, so it's not as bad.
I'll lead the way.
Right, you're the person that's going to get, like, you know, when there's the trials in Nuremberg, you're going to be the one that's going to really be grilled, and I'm just going to be like, I was just following the cool guy in the room. All right, it is that time of the show every single day, 8 o'clock. We do a little something called Blue 42. Today we got Brock Huard in the house.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
I'm doing good. Did you say Seahawks trader or Seahawks trainer?
No, trader.
What was that?
Trader. He's rooting for the 49ers this weekend, Brock. Your thoughts?
Oh, he's rooting for the 49ers, or he thinks they're going to win?
No, he's rooting for the 49ers, and I have also sort of joined in this camp of rooting for the 49ers. Our hope is that the 49ers win the NFC Championship game, lose the Super Bowl, and have a Super Bowl hangover.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm down with that. Yep. Let's do that.
Yeah, yesterday, Brock, we saw a couple of articles suggesting that Pete Carroll is holding Russell Wilson back. Do you think that there's any truth to that?
Were those written by Paul Gallant?
They were not written by me. No. And I know, you know what's funny, Brock? Like, since I've been here, I have definitely cooled down in my opinion on that front. Because I have understood that there is a little bit of balance. There is an idea that you should have a little bit of balance offensively. But there are other people that are looking at what the Seahawks did in the first half. And I actually understand them on this from this standpoint. They ran the football a lot. And in the second half, finally, Russell Wilson and the offense took over.
Yeah, and again, you know, we've talked about this a ton. We talked about it all last offseason. This is going to continue to be a conversation. It's really easy to just kind of put that in a vacuum and just say, well, it's all because of what the Seahawks do offensively, and not put into effect or count what the defense is doing on the other side of the ball and how they're going about playing their game and calling their game. Just as we have seen, and I hope that you know, dig into that and read that. Look at how the Seahawks play defensively when they get up 20 points. Look at how most people in this league play defensively when they get ahead. They want to keep things in front of them and limit some of the big plays and limit some of their pressure. And thus, you know, it's a little bit easier to throw as it was for the Seahawks in the second half of that game. Seahawks still tried to throw in the first half. They still did plenty of called passes, play-action passes, of Russell scrambling passes, and unfortunately, you know, did not get it done and did not execute. You know, I will say this, the philosophy of protecting the football at all costs, and that's what Russell does, and especially in the first half of all games, you know, it's helped them be the winningest Seahawks team in any decade that we have ever seen. I still believe Russell Wilson is the winningest quarterback through his first 8 seasons of anybody. This is not a new phenomenon. This is not a one-season deal. It was not the Dallas Cowboys game alone. It's really largely how Russell has also played over 8 seasons of being a caretaker of the football, which is the single most important thing in their program. And Russ is just not going to take some of that risk, especially in first half of games. So there's a million things that go into it. If you want to boil it down and just look at one aspect of it, that's fine. And write articles about it, that is fine. But it's not going to, I think, deter Coach Carroll or the guy with the ball in his hands, Russell Wilson, from his decision-making processes in the first half of these games.
All right, Brock, Marshawn Lynch made a nice return to Seattle. It was nice seeing number 24 out there, but it was pretty much out of necessity. What are the odds that he comes back to the Hawks in 2020?
Bump, I would put him at 0, but I can't quite do that with Coach Carroll. I'm going to leave it at like 0.0001%. That was an amazing story to watch him rush for a bunch of touchdowns in those couple games that he got to play. What, 4 touchdowns in 3 games was awesome. Really, really fun and energizing for everybody. I think both in the fan base and as you heard from teammates within that locker room and in the practice field as well. But over the course course of an entire offseason, over the course of a training camp, over the course of a season next year. I don't see that happening. And on top of it, and this is going to be an incredible running back class. Daniel Jeremiah, it says that this is the best receiving core and crew that he has ever scouted going into a draft, the best class in his 27 years of doing it. I'll be curious when it's all said and done and everybody announces, you know, they're leaving as the running back from LSU did yesterday, if Daniel Jeremiah, where he would rank this running back crew, because I think it is really deep as well. So you're going to have an immense amount of talent, a talent pool in the draft. I think there's some free agent possibilities as well. Obviously, Carson and Penny aren't going anywhere. So I think the odds are really, really slim that we see 24 again toe to ball as a Seahawk.
One of those free agent possibilities could be Derrick Henry. You would be very hard-pressed to see Tennessee letting him walk away, but they do have a very good offensive line. Maybe, Brock, they look at those guys that you mentioned that potentially are coming in the draft and think to themselves, all right, we can replace Derrick Henry. Do you think that Derrick Henry is somebody that the Seahawks would entertain should he hit the open market?
I don't think so, Paul. Especially at what that is going to cost, more than likely. You know, for other teams, they're going to have a much bigger need at the running back position that don't have a 1,000-yard back. And Chris Carson, I believe, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Or a Rashad Penny that was just finally starting to hit his stride, and someone you took in the first round and still want to see that value come all the way back. So, yeah, I think that would be a bit... Richard and Seahawks and others would have more need, and that's a market, and probably more of a market demand for Henry elsewhere.
Question three. You told us, and you said this on the Brock and Salk podcast, you want elite speed with playmaking ability for this Seahawks team this offseason. Is there a specific position where you feel like that elite speed and playmaking ability is needed most?
Yeah, in the secondary. I think in the secondary is probably an area where I would love to see it. You know, for a decade, Pete's philosophy and their belief in training and equipping and building cornerbacks has not really changed. You know, he's not spent high draft capital. I think Shaquille Griffin is a third rounder, was the highest corner they've ever drafted. And I was doing a little digging last night, looking at these teams left in the playoffs and looking at the Seahawks season and the last couple seasons defensively. And it really stood out to me. Do you know how many interceptions Seahawks cornerbacks, and that includes the nickel corners and their cornerbacks, do you know how many interceptions they had in 2018 and how many? It's the same number in 2018 as it is in 2019. How many interceptions do you think that position garnered for this defense?
I'm going to guess less than five, but I don't have a specific number. So if I have to give one, I'll say three.
There you go. You nailed it a lot. They had three.
That's
three
it?
Interceptions. That's it. That's it. The Green Bay Packers corners this year had 10. They've had 10. The 49ers corners have had 8. There's a number of individual players over the last couple seasons at that position that have had 4 by themselves than the entire group in totality. Shaquille Griffin had 2 last year, and Justin Coleman had 1. So they combined for 3. And this year it was all Trey Flowers, actually. He had 3, and there was not another cornerback that had an interception on this roster. That's got to change moving forward. I mean, when this thing was coming in at their very, very best, you had one of the great ball hawks in all the NFL in Richard Sherman that led the NFL in interceptions in his, you know, 7-8-year stretch here in Seattle, and was so dominant early on when people tried to pick on him. And, you know, it's kind of like that sack number we talked about. Shaquille had a ton of knockdowns this year and pass deflections. I thought he played really well. He's absolutely a starting corner in this league. But kind of like sacks versus pressures are game changers. You need those sacks. You need those negative plays. You need them as a group. This defense needs them. Same can be said for interceptions. Your safety's got them. Your linebacker's got enough of them. Their numbers in total were not terribly low. But to me, I would love to see a true ball-hawking corner. Like, if you can't play the ball, I'm done with you. I'm done with those experiments. I need somebody in that position that knows routes, that knows anticipation, and ultimately knows how to go up and get that ball and take it away. I'd like to see that an area prioritized as well.
So it sounds like you're saying the Hawks need a veteran out there. Earlier we talked about Chris Harris. He's 32 years old. The Broncos might let him go. How do you think he would fit into this defense?
Well, veterans, as you know, have had a hard time making it here in Seattle. They went that route about mid-tenure with Pete Carroll and paid a veteran corner, and I think he lasted one season. You know, they've tried it with different guys that they have brought in. I think sometimes it is hard for veteran guys that have played in different systems and have spent 10 years of their career just fundamentally doing some things differently in their technique than you know, what Pete feels very, very strongly about and how to go about limiting those big plays. So I would just love to see, you know, years ago we had a caller, Roger, you know, who yelled at us, I want a guard. I just want a guard. I don't want to convert a defensive lineman. You know, I want a guard. And that's, you know, for me, I just want a ball-hawking corner. Somebody who in college showed you, man, they've got a sense for the ball. They know how to anticipate, and they know how to catch. I just want an elite, elite corner that knows how to do that. Not a safety turn corner, not a project turn corner. I want a ball-hawking corner for this secondary.
Can we just draft a guard? I mean, someone who's played guard all of his life, someone who wants to go to the Pro Bowl as a guard, not a go-between, not a hybrid, not a switchover, not a defensive lineman, a guard. I just want a draft, a high-level guard.
Just a high-level guard. So just a high-level corner for Brock Huard. Where do you find it, though? Because if you can't do it from a veteran, you're going to have to take a flyer on a guy in the draft. And the odds of you finding that guy at the back of the first round, let alone later than that, that true ball hawk, feels like it's a really tough proposition.
It can be, or maybe you trade for a younger, you know, a younger corner elsewhere, not just a 32-year-old. Maybe it's a guy that's a couple of years into this league, and you've got some serious draft capital. You know, I think that trade market will be one that will be very enticing over the next few months. The ability to trade your supplemental picks, the ability to have some top-end picks in your back pocket, you know, some possibility of trading some other current players of areas of strength on your roster that other teams need. And I think we're going to continue to see that trend. We've seen it the last couple of years, you know, more and more trades in the NFL. And, you know, I think that's an avenue that we've got to be a little bit more open to than we have in the past, especially with some of the assets in the capital this group has this offseason.
Do the Hawks give up on Ugo Amadi, or do you bring a guy in to kind of allow him to develop and not really force him into action early?
I think he's a great nickel, man. I want to see him. I want to see him really get that opportunity to run with that position. I do think he's got a sense for the ball. He was always around it. He had one chance of that pick six, unfortunately, that just bounced off of his hands. Otherwise, you could have added that to the list this year as the only nickel interception for this team. So, no, he's a guy that I like. I love his quickness. He's a perfect example of a guy that was a ball hawk collegiately. You saw it in special teams all season long. That guy knows and can track the football and has a sense for the ball, and even in his limited opportunities of some of his coverage in nickel this year. No, he's a guy that I'd be excited about, that I would really say, hey, man, in your sophomore year here, this is going to be your nickel job, and we're going to do all we can to grow you at that position, because I think there's a lot of just natural resources to work with.
Would be nice to see him get a little bit of seasoning early on in the regular season so that this time of year he'd actually have a little experience underneath his belt. Hopefully we'll see that next year. Brock Huard, we always appreciate when you join us for Blue 42. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Always fun, guys, and thanks to Twitter Pilot for making it happen. See ya.
All right. So, look, we opened up the phone lines earlier, and I feel like it's fine to do it again. 866-979-3776, because we began today's show talking about perhaps a straw army. A straw army of those who are on Seahawks Twitter, people who actually, I feel like, have some very, I think, sound opinions on the team. Specifically, I would say Ben Baldwin of The Athletic, that have raised issue with the future of Pete Carroll as head coach of the Seattle Seahawks and have raised the notion that maybe he is holding Russell Wilson back. And while I disagree with that, I do understand why someone might feel that way because of how the first half unfolded for the Seahawks. I get it. And I'm not trying to say that you should be, I don't know, banished into the Phantom Zone or anything like that. But I will say that as far as having a team that's had all the limitations that it had this year, there are very few head coaches that could have gotten you to this point. There really are. And if you go into the great unknown, there is a very good chance that you end up with somebody who is worse, that cannot manage an entire team, that cannot give you the best ability to win every single Sunday, whether it's because of preparation in the week, game management during the game. I think that a lot of you might need to take a listen to a little song. I forget what the band name is, but there's a song with the lyrics go, "You don't know what you got till it's gone." I would say that is probably what you have in Pete Carroll. And yeah, there are definitely some frustrations here. Guess what? 31 other teams don't have Bill Belichick. It's that's the way of this league. There's only one real coach that you look at and you're like, yep, this guy's just about as perfect as it gets. And even then, there are some issues with him.
Bill Belichick lost a round before the Seahawks did.
100%, Jess. Yeah.
In a year when they are accused of cheating.
Yeah. Also
again.
That.
Let's not forget the Hawks lost to the Saints, the Ravens, the Rams, embarrassing loss to the Cardinals, and the 49ers. That's an okay season to me. 11 wins. You had
that's
a chance.
More than okay. That's a good season considering the limitations. It really is.
11 wins. You had a chance to have the number one seed in the NFC and to win the division. I think 12 is getting a little spoiled here. Realize you could be the Cardinals. You could be the Browns. You could be the Buccaneers. You could be the Falcons. And a lot of those teams, the Falcons have a Julio Jones there. They have a nice-looking roster. You look at the Cleveland Browns, there were Super Bowl picks at the beginning of the year with all the talent that they have on offense and on defense. No one was picking the Hawks to do anything this year, yet they still had a chance to win the division and get the number one seed in the NFC. Give this guy a break. Now, I get it. Guys want to see Russell Wilson throw the ball. It's crazy how your perception changes. Let's rewind to 2013-14. Don't let him, he's just a game manager. Run the football. Everyone's crying just to run the football, let the defense win the ball game. Now I feel like Russell Wilson has elevated himself to a different level. So now people are rightfully so asking that you let him loose. If you look at the past 2 years, the leash is getting looser. And I think next year you're just going to see them take off. I think now it's the third year with Schottenheimer. He trusts Russell Wilson. Russell knows the offense. He's proven he can handle it. He's going to let him go next year, my opinion.
There were moments earlier this season where we were giving Brian Schottenheimer credit. And I know that's weird now, especially given how that game against the Packers went, specifically just because of how often they ran the football with Marshawn Lynch early on. That three and out series where they handed it off to him one, two, three plays in a row, even though the first play did net you 8 yards. Oh, it's hard to look back at that and to feel any positive feelings about it. But a lot of people are going to focus on Pete Carroll. And there is an element of coach fatigue that I think sets in across the league. He has been here for 10 years. But this team overachieved. This wasn't a very good team. It wasn't. It was above average. That's it. It was above average. You don't have a pass rush. You don't have a good offensive line. You had a bunch of injuries as
again,
well.
Do we have to go through the injury list again?
I suppose.
You lose three running backs, three tight ends. Your O-line is, you don't know who's going to start that week. Michael Kendricks had a couple weeks off. Cody Barton had to fill in for him. Tedrick Thompson started the season at safety. He's out. You had to bring in a Quandre Diggs. So many things happened this year, yet they still won 11 games. I think that he should be praised for his coaching at this point. Granted, there's some delay games that you don't like. There's some decisions of fourth downs that people are going to question. But end of the day, he made chicken. Or what? Hold on. Trying to say? He made
chicken salad from chicken you know what.
There you go.
Right. There you go. And look, this is, I get it. I do get it. Okay. I'm not trying to say, oh, wow, you're just a dumb head for feeling that Pete Carroll like is holding Russell Wilson back. I understand the sentiment. But at the same time, you have to realize that if you're deciding that you need to move on from this guy, you need to have a better solution than just saying, oh, let's just move on. You have to have a better solution. And I'm sorry, like Eric Bieniemy with the Kansas City Chiefs, which has been suggested by some, I could run the Chiefs offense. I know that's very disrespectful to people that coach in the NFL, but let's be honest. Like, how could you not succeed with all the speed that offense has? It is ridiculous. I mean, they Mecole Hardman, another first-round pick, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, what's his name? Sammy Watkins?
Patrick Mahomes?
Patrick. Oh, yeah. By the way, forgot about the great quarterback that might be the best quarterback in the game right now. And for all those who are Russell Wilson is number one guys, I understand it. But did you see Patrick Mahomes against the Houston Texans? Okay, let's go back to the phones. The number to jump aboard. It is 866-979-3776. We have got Joe in Hobart. Joe, what's up, bud?
Hey. Since when do we got a bunch of nerds with time on their hands that can be on Twitter all day that we take serious? Like, I don't understand why Seahawks Twitter, some kid made a cool video, which I really love, by the way, but I don't like these guys are not media members. They're no different than me. I've been watching Seahawks football. I'm 42 years old. I've been watching.
Joe. I guess we lost Joe. I'm guessing that Joe is going to eventually get to the point that there are some people that watch this team that are perhaps a little bit too analytically driven. And I think some of them are going to go to, and look, I think there are some members of the media that actually feel this way as well. I was surprised by the amount of people that felt it was the wrong decision to not go for it on that 4th and 11.
4th and 11 in your own territory. You have time and timeouts on your side. You punt that football. If you don't convert that 4th and 11, now they have a short field and pretty much ice the game. I agree with that decision.
I will specifically point, and Joe Fan had a piece for this for NBC Sports Northwest about it, and you know, it was well written. There were some solid points, and he brought up that the Seahawks were 4 of 7 in 3rd and 10 situations in those playoffs. Okay, but yeah, you had 4 conversions against the Philadelphia Eagles. That defense stinks. So you're going up against the Packers defense. Totally different dynamic.
Yeah.
You're talking about a Packers defense that has 2 pass rushers that are very good in the Smith brothers, and a secondary that, let's be honest, if you watch that game back, that Packers secondary played really, really well. You really think you're going to convert it on 4th and 11 against that Packers defense?
I mean, there's a chance that you do, but the odds are against you. It's this risk-reward. If you don't convert that, they have a short field. At that point, it's all about field position. You make them work for it. You think that, especially in the second half, Seahawks defense played pretty good. They had some 3-and-outs. They were good on 3rd down. So you ride the wave of your defense. You make the decision and say, you know what, our defense is playing decent right now. Put on the foot, make Aaron Rodgers win it. Unfortunately, he did go down and win the ball game.
He is Michael Bumpuson for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Russell Wilson is being held back by Pete Carroll. If you have an actual reason, like something that can convince us that that's actually the case right now, please let us know. Also, if you have a solution for afterwards, that's what I really want to hear, because I doubt you do. It is Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bumpus, the wide receiver, in for Danny O'Neill. Danny's going to be back with us tomorrow. I am Paul Gallant, 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776 to get aboard the 710 ESPN Seattle radio station as we talk about, look, a small, perhaps straw army of Seahawks Twitter and Seahawks fans who are looking at Pete Carroll, and they feel like he is definitively holding Russell Wilson back, and that because of that, maybe, just maybe, it is time to move on. Let's go to Ian in Seattle. Ian, what is up?
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Doing well, man.
Hey, I was just saying, this whole coverage reminds me a little bit of politics. Don't worry, like, I won't talk about politics, but everybody has to have an extreme poll or a hot take. Why can't we have nuance and just say, look, Pete Carroll's one of the, let's say, 5 best coaches out there, but he has an improvement area, and we should ask him to, you know, as fans, to, you know, maybe get a little better at analytics or better at game management without going all the way to some extreme poll of, hey, this guy stinks, we got to fire him.
Ian, I love it. I love it. Every year, every offseason, teams go back and they reflect as players and as coaches. What can you do better? And I think that's exactly what Pete Carroll has to do. I appreciate your logic there.
From an improvement standpoint, year to year, that is an expectation that you have of players, and it should be one that you have of coaches. And based off of, I think, the people that have been so frustrated with it, they feel like it's just never going to happen because it hasn't happened. Would you say that's a fair thing to describe what has happened over the last couple of years? Because for me, this is my first year here, and I can understand why some people look at me and they're like, oh, Paul, you're an outsider. You've never been here before. And it's granted from this standpoint. I look at the season that they just had, and I am very accepting of the fact that they went 11-5 because I don't think they were that good of a football team. But I also look at some of the things that have been happening, and I understand when I came here that there were a lot of people that looked at the way that the Seahawks operated, and they were like, well, why doesn't Russell Wilson throw the football more, seeing as he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the game for the last couple of years? Do you feel like there has been progress on that front? And where has the progress specifically been?
There has been progress. This is, what, a top 5 ranked offense in the NFL right now. Last year, let me remind folks, they're around like 15, 16, 17, around the middle of the pack. Russell Wilson did open it up at the beginning of the season, had to carry this football team the first 7 or 8 games. I just think people need to look at the progression of Russell Wilson. Every year he's gotten better. Every year he's been allowed to do more. And I expect next year for him to be allowed to do more. But you can't ignore that you have a Chris Carson in the backfield. 1,000 yard, 2 years in a row, he's rushed for 1,000 yards. Like, so what are you going to do? You're just going to say, ignore the run game and let's just throw the football. Let me also remind you that Tennessee Titans led the league in rushing. They're still playing football. 49ers top five. They're still playing football. At one point, the Hawks were playing football. The number one seed in all of the land was the Baltimore Ravens.
Packers and
run the football. Packers run the football.
Chiefs are an anomaly.
You have to be able to run the football. If there is a change I think that needs to be made, more quick game. Instead of this is play action, I'm going to throw it deep every single time. If people are expecting Pete Carroll and Schottenheimer just to change who they are and just completely abandon the run, that's not realistic. And why would you abandon the run when the teams who run the football have the most success in the NFL?
Bump, can I ask you as the resident coach in-house a question about Pete Carroll? Isn't the first step of that what we talked about, improvements, being able to look at what didn't work and honestly admit it? How difficult is that as a coach to say, okay, we tried this and it doesn't work? Because it takes a little bit of admitting when you're wrong and there's ego always involved. So how difficult is that in general and how difficult do you think it is for Pete?
I think in general it is difficult, especially when you're talking to the outsiders, right? You don't want to talk to a reporter and have them shame you like, yeah, I knew that better. I need to do that better. But when you're in your coach's circle, they know their analytics. They see it. Pete Carroll knows that he has some garbage challenges. He knows that his clock management was poor at times, but he's not just going to come out to the public and say, all right, guys, go ahead and roast me. Here it goes. So I think it's difficult, but if you have the right people around you, it makes it easier.
When I came here, I did think that this is a team that should be throwing the football a whole lot more.
I remember.
And I felt that very strongly. And then I watched a couple of games this season where the running game is the reason that they won. And the big problem that I have with the way that Pete's operated down the stretch is that I think he was wishfully thinking that they could continue the same thing with a guy in Travis Homer who might have some potential and a guy in Marshawn Lynch who was a legend when he was here back the last time around. But that's a long time ago, and that could have been different. That said, this was a good Packers defense that you played, a Packers defense that I'll admit I underestimated a little bit. I thought it was really just all Za'Darius Smith. They have a very good secondary. They made it difficult in the first half. There were moments where Russell was holding on to the football for a while, and I will once again go back to those who were criticizing that decision to not go for it on that 4th and 11. Okay, the Seahawks might have been able to get some of those conversions on 3rd and long, against the Philadelphia Eagles. The 3rd and long, and I'm talking like 3rd and 6, against the Green Bay Packers, the Seahawks were 2 of 5, but guess how those two conversions on 3rd and 6 or longer came for the Seahawks in that game against the Packers? Guess.
Russell, running.
He ran.
Yes.
That is not sustainable. That is Madden offense. That does not work. It is 710 ESPN, Seattle, Danny and Gallant. You got Michael Pumpas in for Danny. I am Paul Gallant. Let's go to Chad in Everett now. Chad, what's up?
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man.
So here's my thing. You had the New England Patriots. They got Tom Brady. They went to the Super Bowl. They won. There has been a 10-year stretch where Bill Belichick did not win a Super Bowl. The New England Patriots fans did not call for him to be fired. Why are we calling for Pete Carroll to be fired? He's getting us to the dance. We're dancing every year. We have a shot. Are we running into things that we can't handle in the playoffs? Yes, some of that's injury. Some of that's guys getting old. We improve each year. Last year we went out in the wild card round. This year it was the divisional round. Next year, maybe we go to the Super Bowl again. How about we let Pete Carroll coach the football team?
Chad, I get where you're coming from here. And here's one of those things when it comes to a guy like Bill Belichick. And it comes to any coach. Now, you're right. No one has ever said that about Belichick. Fire Belichick. But they have suggested maybe he has lost his fastball as far as talent evaluation and things like that. I think for someone like Pete Carroll, when you see a team that plays at the level that the 2014 and the 2015 teams played, you think to yourself, wow, this should be it every single year. And you trick yourself into believing it. And then you add a little bit of nostalgia into it. Nostalgia is one of the most powerful drugs that there is, because you think that the past is not only something that was so much better than the present, by the way, though it was with the Legion of Boom days, but you think that it's reattainable. That level of team is probably not reattainable. To bring in another head coach and to reset your program, be honest with yourself. How is that going to get you closer in the short term while Russell Wilson is playing at this level to where you were? It's not, because here's the problem. When you replace coaches, Bump, and I'm sure you've seen this before because you've played, it is a good old boy system. Coaches have their guys. You bring in another coach, they're going to bring in a lot of their other coaches. And here's the funny thing about it. As someone who's covered the Houston Texans and saw Bill O'Brien his first years on the job, he brought in a lot of his guys from Penn State. They pretty much all flamed out, and it took him time to figure out that those guys weren't cutting it. So then he brings in some other guys. And the cycle continues and continues until they finally think that they have something that's actually presentable. By the way, everyone in Houston can't stand Bill O'Brien right now. And they are also a team that just lost in the second round of the playoffs to a likely Super Bowl team. And honestly, the Chiefs are a more likely Super Bowl team than the Green Bay Packers.
At the end of the day, all you want is a chance to win. A chance at the Super Bowl. A chance at the division. A chance at the number one seed. That's exactly what they got this year. They had a chance. They fell short. They fell short, obviously. But Pete Carroll and his staff gives this team a chance. No matter who's on the field. Yep. If it's a Cody Barton. How many rookies play this year? Cody Barton. Marquise Blair.
Ugo Amadi didn't. The problem is they played so little, and I think that could have been changed earlier in the year.
And he said that. Pete Carroll said that like a week ago or so.
Right.
You know, he wishes he would have played these younger guys. Who would have known that they would have sustained all these injuries as well? You know, they were the most injured team in the NFL. The most injured team in the NFL went 11-5 and had a chance at the number one seed.
Yeah.
Come on.
One last call. 866-979-3776. We have got Miles in Seattle. Miles, what's up?
Yeah, how y'all doing today?
Doing well, bud.
Good.
Good, good. I just got 3 points, and I hope y'all let me get them by you guys.
Fire away.
One, I've been here since 78, and I've been watching the Seahawks since day one, and since Pete Carroll came in, he's done change our regime. I mean, we've been to the playoffs almost every single year, and it's because of him and Snyder that's been making it happen. So what happened this year and even last year, we went to the playoffs last year, in all actuality, if we were able to keep healthy, we probably would have went further. But you can't help if you're not healthy, if you can't keep 100%. The men healthy. And this man has took people that were not, you know, not even starters, and then took us to the playoffs. And a second playoff game, pretty much.
Right. So that's
we
what
basically lost. Go ahead.
I'm just saying. I'm just trying to sum it up because I want to get all your points in. That was point one. And I feel you. You've been here for the long haul. You've seen this all, and you can appreciate where this team has been. What's point number two?
Okay. So point number two is the biggest thing is our corners. Because if you watch how Griffin and Fowler play, you know, when we went to the playoffs is because we played man-to-man. We've been playing so much zone is that when they actually pick up off the receivers, they don't even know who they're picking up. And they're almost like 5 yards off the receiver. If you go back and look at the Green Bay game, you know, we should have actually had two people pick up on Adams. And then that probably wouldn't even, you know, that catch wouldn't even happen when they got the first down.
Right. I agree with you on that. The corners need to be better. What's point three?
Yeah, and a point three is, I mean, at the end of the day, there would be no other coach in this world that, you know, we had no running backs. And Homer, yeah, I give it to this man, the guy came in. But there would be no coach in the whole world that would be able to pull out a beast and throw him back on the field and put some points on the board for us. That's all I got to say.
Appreciate the phone call, Miles. Some sound points there. And I think that there is an element of, look, appreciate what you have. And I hate to be that guy in a we want everything now kind of culture, and especially when we know how good things have been, a little patience is necessary because I think they were ahead of schedule this year. This was not a very talented team, and they somehow got to the second round of the playoffs and were really a better Michael Dixon punt or a non-sack on third down or a catch by Malik Turner away from potentially being in the NFC Championship game and playing a third game against the San Francisco 49ers this weekend. He is Michael Pompas, in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up next, someone in baseball is finally speaking out on the Astros scandal. Finally! About time, right? Well, wait until you hear them. You'll hear it next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bump is sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. We have been waiting for some people, anyone that is in the sport of baseball, to weigh in on these Astros and their cheating punishments. We have not seen really anyone do it. The Boston Red Sox as well. We saw Alex Cora and the Sox mutually agree to part ways. There seems to be a general understanding that those who are on the record complaining about the punishments, and this is from one of the ESPN articles, might actually be punished more than the people that have actually been punished, which just goes to show you that Rob Manfred is a terrible commissioner when it comes to baseball. But we finally did hear from somebody. I'm not sure how to properly give this person a title, because this person is part of Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, correct?
Yep.
And on top of that, this person also works for the New York Mets. Jess, what does Jessica Mendoza do for the New York Mets?
She has a front office role. I believe she acts in an advisory role.
Special advisor is usually what they call it.
Okay.
Like CeCe Sabathia, I believe, is going to be a special advisor to the Yankees this year. Alex Rodriguez has done that in the past.
Okay, so she is, not only is she a commentator, but she is also a special advisor to the New York Mets. And here is what she had to say about the Astros scandal.
Going public, yeah. I mean, I get it. If you're with the Oakland A's and you're on another team, I mean, heck yeah, you better be telling your teammates, look, hey, heads up if you hear some noises when you're pitching. Like, this is what's going on, for sure. But to go public, yeah, that it didn't sit well with me. And honestly, it made me sad for the sport that that's how this all got found out. I mean, this wasn't something that MLB naturally investigated, or that even other teams complained about because they naturally heard about and then investigations happened. But it came from within. It was a player that was a part of it, that benefited from it during the regular season when he was a part of that team. And that, when I first heard about it, it's just, it hits you like any teammate would, right? It's something that you don't do. I totally get telling your future teammates, helping them win, letting people know. But to go public with it and call them out and start all of this, it's hard to swallow.
This opinion is getting absolutely destroyed on the mean streets of the internet.
Why?
It is getting destroyed because, Michael Bumpus, she is saying essentially that she is sad that somebody exposed cheating.
She said that someone that benefited from the cheating exposed it.
And by the way, Mike Fiers did. And Mike Fiers, he was all too happy to accept that World Series championship ring in 2017. Just saying. I'm a little awkward.
I'm not mad at her. You don't snitch on your own team. First off, you don't snitch, period. I think it's like a rule. You know, it's in between competitors. Like, if I know you're cheating, I'm coming over to you. I'm calling you out. I'm talking to your head coach. But it's like, I'm not going to go out to the public especially to like report and say, hey, this is exactly what was going on. If I get investigated and now there are officials sitting there talking to me and my career is on the line, this is between you and I, we're in a meeting and I have to, I'm taking an oath and I have to be truthful, then yeah, but I don't voluntarily give this information out.
How else is this getting out then, though? Because that's the problem. This was not going to get out any other way. Baseball has this cute little memo that they send out to the sport saying, all right, guys, stop with your sign stealing. It's time to stop. Come on, let's move on. That's all they did. They were not going to do a proper investigation on this, much like they didn't do an investigation on steroids at all. They just twiddled their thumbs and sat in the background. It's the way that it went down. I can understand why especially teammates of Mike Fiers would be rubbed the wrong way. And as someone who has been in an actual professional locker room before, Michael, I can understand why you feel the same way too. But if this doesn't get out, a team wins with a competitive advantage, a clear competitive advantage, and nothing is ever said about it. Isn't that wrong?
This is the culture that baseball created. It's been this way for hundreds of years. You steal signs. You don't mention when someone's cheating. Everyone knew Mark McGwire was juiced up. Everyone knew Sammy Sosa was juiced up.
That bot's natural.
No one says anything. This is a direct reaction or product of what baseball has done for hundreds of years. It goes back to 1900. You know, that's just what they do. So I get it. Cheaters should be exposed. They should be exposed. If you're cheating, it's not good for the sport. I get it. But a guy who got a ring, who benefited from cheating, leaked it. And that's my problem. You can't say, yeah, give me that ring. Let me benefit from this. By the way, guys, this is what happened. It shouldn't work that way. And I would like to think that banging on a trash can, can't you hear something's banging? You play this team, what, four or five times a year. And every time you play these guys, there's some banging in the
background.
Danny Farquhar
did notice it. He noticed it in game. And there's video of him, you know, calling over his catcher because he was hearing what was happening. But he didn't say anything at the time. So to your point, Bump, he didn't also bring it to light. He said he was kind of waiting for reporters after the game to ask him about it and ask about his frustration so that he could speak on it. But nobody did. So he stayed kind of silent about it.
And why? Because it's the culture of baseball. They created this.
It's so weird, though, because there's been a suspicion. And by the way, it is weird that Jessica Mendoza is bringing it up from this perspective. Jessica Mendoza is a consultant to the New York Mets.
That's the biggest problem people are having on the line. Because
right.
Carlos Beltran and his association.
Right, because Carlos Beltran's the new manager of the New York Mets, and he was implicated in this scandal. And they said in the report, oh, well, it wasn't that big of a deal what he did. What? Oh, okay, well, if Alex Cora is orchestrating this, and Carlos Beltran, who wasn't playing as much in 2017, and a lot of people on that Astros clubhouse will credit him as one of the reasons that they won the World Series, well, if he's involved in this, I can sort of see why he was credited with helping them win the World Series. Because there was talk about how he was helping them decode Yu Darvish during the World Series. Okay, well, yeah, two and two together. It seems like Carlos Beltran's involved in that. Jessica Mendoza's trying to save face a little bit for the new manager of the team.
Well, she's basically saying snitches get stitches. I mean, she's saying, politely. Well, yeah, use it to your advantage. As you know, if you're the guy who's leaking this and you benefited from it, yeah, you're within the same division, you know, with Oakland, and so yeah, okay, use it when you go there, but don't make it public.
Cheat
the cheaters.
I kind of respect how polite she was with saying it, though. Like, well, snitches get stitches. It wasn't quite like that, but you get what I'm saying.
She said it was hard to swallow.
Yes. It is Danny and Gallant, Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Coming up next, we did this earlier. We actually had a lot of fun with this. I am surprised by the amount of people in this city that on a weekend where it's really hard to pick one team to root for are rooting for the San Francisco 49ers. If we open things up a second time and ask who we're rooting for, because I still haven't really decided on a team. I'm just being a nihilist right now. I can't really pick any of these teams. 866-979-3776. 866-979-3776. Are you going to be like the people that earlier in today's show were all about that 49er love? Because for whatever reason, that is the way that people seem to be leaning this weekend as far as rooting for someone. Please. I think you need to change the tune. I think you need to change the tune of this city. We can't be rooting for the 49ers. Get out of here. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.